Today, we are catching up with Pete Badia, the COO of Red Mesa Group. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Say Pete Badia the third.
Pete Badia the third.
So we're gonna go back a little bit and talk about some of the history in your group, and then work up to present day and some exciting news about the future. So your family started their first foray, I think was 1981, the C-Bar.
1980, the C-Bar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was on 4th Street.
The same location that Red Mesa is in currently.
And they operated that, I think they closed it, you said you were around 13 years old?
Yeah, 13 years in 1994, they closed it down.
So what do you remember about growing up at C-Bar?
I used to go in every day with my dad. My grandfather used to do the books, a very family-oriented business. It was their first time doing restaurants. Someone who they had met, a mutual friend, had invited them to come up and start that business. That's how my family ended up in St. Pete, of all places. And walking through just the day-to-day, the different clientele, St. Pete in 1980 was a much, much different place than it is now. And seeing all the faces, these are people that you would see at T-Ball and church and stuff like that. And it was very cool, because being in the restaurant business is a very different occupation. When you go to school and people ask, what does your family do? And, it was C-Bar, and it was an institution at that time. I can talk to people and know how long they've been in town by whether they go, hey, do you remember C-Bar? And I said, yeah, I do. I love that place. And so I grew up in the industry. That was one of my favorite things to do, to go to work with my dad.
And the business is a tough one, right? It's a grind. The margins are thin. There's so many variables. And then all of a sudden, a good thing got noticed, and more seafood restaurants started popping up and down 4th Street. So competition came in heavy.
Yeah, I think 5 different restaurants opened within 1 year. Like any industry, someone sees something doing well in the market and, very easy to replicate that. And it suited the style of cuisine in St. Pete at the time. Florida seafood, you still see those going strong. So a lot of different companies came in and started doing that. And we decided that market was saturated. We start to see the sales decline. Some partner issues. Fortunately, my grandfather had purchased the building. So we decided to pivot, change directions with that.
That's where a certain chef from Oaxaca came into the picture. How did that roll?
Well, executive chef Chris Fernandez, my business partner, he had worked as a line cook at C-Bar with my dad for 3 years. He was also at the Vinoy. He had worked at the Columbia. My mom, being from Southern California, she's Mexican and Irish. My dad is Honduran and Cuban. And so this cuisine was something that we grew up with. We're very familiar with it. Very foreign to this area. A lot of different ethnic cuisines had, had their roots. They'd had their time. They've expanded rapidly. Italian food at one point was, was foreign. The difference is they did regional Mexican. That was what their passion was. They looked around and saw that there was not a single Mexican restaurant in St. Pete, and then saw the opportunity. What I thought was a big gamble is doing regional Mexican, authentic dishes from Oaxaca, where Chef is from. Now, a lot of people are familiar with the moles. It's a culinary destination, but back then it was very foreign. And I think most people were expecting fajitas, chimichangas. They really had to almost talk to every other table that came in who had a preconceived notion of what Mexican was. And I think they were ahead of their time. They were kind of that made from scratch, chef-driven, fresh seafood, fresh steaks. Us being in the seafood industry for years, do all of our fish, cut daily there. And so it was a big gamble, and it was very difficult at first. You didn't have the, food channel, the cooking networks, the Top Chef, all that stuff. So people came in and tried it, and they were putting out a great product, and people, returned. And that's kind of how you get that one dish at a time. It just slowly builds up over time.
So a couple of things to dig in there. You were there. You were, I think you said 13 when?
14. I was a busboy when we opened Red Mesa.
What do you remember about the energy between closing the one and, going through the grind of that sort of negative experience to the aspiration of going at it, take another at bat?
It was really scary. I just finished middle school. It was like the summer. And, we went in and did everything. When you're a mom and pop operation, you don't have the corporate backing. The only thing that we had was the building. And you go in there and look, and we moved equipment around. We figured out what we could reuse. A lot of the stuff, and probably the dishes that are currently on that menu, are because we had a broiler and we didn't have a certain piece of equipment. And so you kind of built it out from there. My dad working long hours, my brother and I in there doing drywall. We gutted and remodeled that entire place ourselves as a family. My cousin came down. He's about a year older than me. You have to do it yourself. There is nobody else, because anybody else you bring in, you have to spend more money. And you know, there was a time when I went to go in there one day. It was my graduation party, and we had to get ice from the restaurant for my party. And my dad asked me to bus tables, and I was all sweaty and wearing a tank top. It was Florida in the summer. And, you know, it's the one and only time he'd ever had to say, you know, look, if this doesn't work, we don't succeed. We lose the house. And, you know, that's something that I remember to this day of that just necessity. If this doesn't happen, we sell the house, we lose the restaurant, we lose everything. And, you know, it's something that was instilled in me early on. And I think it gets lost, you know, as you get older, if you don't have to kind of do that. It's you know where every dollar comes from. And it's something that I've, you know, kind of carried on and worked on. But it was scary. It was terrifying to know that if this didn't work, you look at a half empty restaurant, if you don't get more people in, you're going to have to shut the doors. And I remind myself of that sometimes.
And what was your dad's and the family sort of energy with handling stress? How did you handle the stress of cash flow and all that terrible stuff?
You know, my dad is such an easygoing guy, you know, hardworking. He didn't know. You never knew that. You know, the long hours. I mean, he would leave at 7 in the morning and come home at 11 o'clock at night. You're working 7 days a week. He's in there doing the expo because the expo didn't show up. My mom was hostessing, you know, and you do whatever you have to do. And Chef's children work for us now. We talk about it and how they were always working. And that's just the industry. And it's a lifestyle. You know, mom, dad, kids, you understand that's what you do to pay the bills. And you have a really deep respect for that, you know, because you don't have a choice. You know, I'm a father now. And it goes back to, well, what would I do to make sure that my children were provided for? It's everything. You know, get up on the roof and fix the AC or plunge a toilet. It's anything that has to be done in order to, you know, succeed.
I mean, that's amazing, you know, energy and just, you know, what needs to be done and you do it. You know, you said they started the business Seabar with no restaurant experience, went through the closure, then started it again with all that hard work. Why do you think having a restaurant stuck so hard into the family DNA?
Growing up, you know, being Latin culture, you know, we were in St. Pete, Florida. It was funny. I was the most ethnic person of my friends. No one was Latin here growing up. But it's you invite people into your house. Even as kids, you walk up, you go and you go, hey, would you like something to drink? Hey, you want food? It's over here. It's hospitality. And it's in that same vein. You really invite people into these restaurants. You want to make sure that they have a great experience, that everything is perfect. You know, from the decor to making sure everything's clean. Is how's your food? How's a drink? Can I get you anything else? And it's something that we live. You know, when we go and travel through Latin America, all we do is eat. There's pros and cons of every career, but mine is food. I get paid to eat. I get paid to entertain people. People come into town and they're just passing through with their luggage from college. They stop off at the restaurant. I see them. It's just, that's the best part about it. That makes all the other stressors worthwhile.
And the other variable is family business. So, you know, like you said, Chef's kids are in there and it's remained a family business. Would you have it any other way?
I wouldn't. You know, we've had some amazing people go through. One of the managers that he recently passed away, but he was my GM at 4th Street through COVID, and he worked for my grandfather when he was 17. I think the biggest thing is it's not only family, it's the people that you invite into your home, meaning the employees. When you have as many as we do, you have some good ones and some bad ones, and you have some that are just lifelong friends. You know, he came back and worked for me. That's a testament to how wonderful my grandfather was and my father as operators. You know, just genuinely good guys doing what needed to be done, always being fair, but being firm too. I mean, they were very, very strict because that's what has to happen to run a business. It can't always be fun and games and playing around. It's, you know, we have a great time doing it, but when it comes time to execute and the guests are here, it's game face and you just execute. So those people are why we're here. It is a long list, too long to name, of people who have helped us in different times. I mean, I look fondly at people and managers that I've worked with in my career that were perfect for that time. I don't know if I could hire them now because the business has grown so much. Maybe they're not suited for it the way we are currently, but we would have never have gotten to where we are without them. And it's just that is finding the right people at the right time to win with the team that you have and then continue to move on and move the envelope.
Yeah, it's wise. It's a very common adage that people that are startup people aren't always cruising altitude people, you know, and different times for different people. So the name, tell us how that came about, the branding, what was sort of the
Well, it was regional Mexican and Southwest, you know, before Amazon, we used to get peppers and spices shipped in a cardboard box from Arizona so that we could get the seasoning that we needed to make the food that we were making. A lot of the supermarkets and vendors didn't have it at the time. Red Mesa is supposed to represent a plateau out west, you know, central Mexico, southwest U.S., just the plateau, Red Mesa at sunset. I did not understand the name at the time. And actually looking back, it was like, I don't really get that. But it was something that it was, you know, my mom and dad at that time and chef, and, you know, that's the way they work. They talk about it. They agree upon something. And that's kind of the, what it is. And now I look back and I don't know what else you would call it. What would you say? You know, it's just, it's one of those things that when it's new, it's different, it's strange. And when you, but you, before long, you don't know anything else.
And along those lines, you know, when you think about sort of the division of brain power, right? Obviously working hard, keeping the costs down, making great quality food. Where did that sort of branding, that user experience, you know, how much was that talked about? How much of it was sort of, we just said it and rolled, you know, and how often was it tweaked?
My grandfather used to own a lot of manufacturing down in Honduras. They would do broom handles. And, you know, what we do is we produce, we take raw material and put out a finished product with a service on it. That's where my dad comes in. He's the business guy. Chef and my mom, chef is a genius. He is top five Mexican chefs in the world. I eat at all these different restaurants. We try the stuff. The stuff that he was doing 28 years ago is stuff that's becoming popular now. My mom has an amazing palate. She's an amazing cook. They would do the food aspect of it. My dad would do the business and the nuts and bolts of it, the operations. It's like a good team. Everybody, you know, balances and complements each other. And that's how it works. Chef will make a dish and my dad and I will try it and we'll go, this is the most amazing thing I've ever had. My mom goes, well, what about this, this, and this? And he goes, well, maybe I could do this, this, and this. And it comes back even better. You know, so really our standard is if chef and my mom like it, I think most people are going to like it. They're very discerning palates. And someone who has as much experience eating this food as I do, I still defer to them on what does this need? They're just at a different level than I'm at.
Oh, and then you take that food, there's the plate it sits on, the table that sits on, the experience of walking to that table.
My mom and chef. I mean, my mom and chef, my mom, it's all in that same vein. It's as an artist, it's the design and seeing it all the way through. You know, my dad and I, we were to build a restaurant, it would be like a warehouse with like, you know, plywood tables. That's the form over function. They see it all the way through. That's the eye that they have. The plate that it goes on, chef, you know, when he creates something in his mind, he sees it and it wants to be, how are you going to present it? And I think, you know, like Instagram is summed it up and is it Instagrammable? Mm. You know, you eat with your eyes first in the presentation of it. And my mom, when you walk in, what was the guest received with? What is their first impression of it? 4th Street is difficult because we're in a, you know, a building that was built in 1960. Cantina is stunning. That's an amazing space that we literally took over. It was in 2009 in the recession, and a company out of Park City, Utah had come in and developed that building. It's a 100-year-old firehouse, St. Pete's oldest firehouse, and they were failing. They basically were trying to duplicate Red Mesa in St. Petersburg in 2009, and they just missed the mark. You know, they had everything in place. It was done to the highest level. It was beautiful. But the hardest part is the consistency of food. That is, you know, something that is so easy in principle, but so difficult to execute day in and day out. And they offered us the opportunity to take over the whole bottom floor. And had it not been a recession and had it not been a failed business, we would have never been able to take that opportunity.
Yeah, I want to dig into that next. When you talked about how, obviously, C-Bar, you hit the competition wall, and then you came in with a very unique food that nobody else had. But there's an educational lift on that, right? People have to know what it is and say, okay, I want to come get that. And obviously over time, word of mouth wins the day. You know, looking back, do you think that getting something unique was a key to the success that you had, or do you think it was a lot of extra work to get to where you would have got with good food anyway?
It's both, you know, because if we had gone in and done, you know, to just say an Italian restaurant, there's a lot of very good Italian restaurants. You're competing with a lot of other different people. Even if you're the best of the best, someone may know, well, I like this a little bit more, or this is a little bit closer, or I don't like the drive down there. I don't want to find a parking spot. You know, there's so many different factors. You know, that place became a destination. And when we originally opened Cantina, we did not duplicate the menu because we were afraid of the cannibalization. They're too close together. If we open this up and it's the exact same menu, are we just going to cut our sales in half? Right. And so I think it was the uniqueness. When you go there and look and see the food, it's still unique. 28 years later, they're still, chefs still innovating and doing the newest stuff that's being done in Oaxaca because, you know, food grows and it evolves and it's still evolving. And so we have these new different things that he sees in Mexico or through eating other restaurants he wants to put a spin on, he does. And even one of the chefs that we have there currently, he's from Guanajuato, which is a different part of Mexico. He brings in a whole different element to it. And, you know, that's the best part about chef is that, you know, a good idea is a good idea. He kind of shows him how to get to that finished, polished product that a lot of the young guys are lacking. But what most people don't realize is that a dish is a different iteration. Here's version one, here's version two. And sometimes they nail it, you know, out the gate. Sometimes it's 10 different versions. This cheese, this sauce, cook it this way, do that. And that's the behind the scenes stuff that we really put a lot of effort in to then present the guests with a finished product that we're proud of.
So it was sort of a circumstance then that led to Cantina. How the conversations about expanding in general gone? And then, you know, you have this other restaurant that's on your radar now, this competition. Just walk us through that, the expansion.
So for years, you know, if anybody asks you, you know, say, hey, you should do a restaurant, it's always going to be a block away from their house. Like, where do you live? Tampa. Where do you live? Newport Richey. And we had, you know, dealt with that for years. People want you to build one over by them. And that had been the vision for my parents for a long time, a Red Mesa 2 in Tampa. Chef and I actually went to a restaurant show. Chef and I go, we eat at about 20 to 22 restaurants over the course of a weekend at a restaurant show. And this was in Chicago. And we had walked through in the last night, the restaurant where we had made reservations for, it actually closed. And so I said, well, I saw a place back there in the cab ride. And so we went and checked it out. And it was called Angels and Mariachis. And it was a rock cantina. You know, I'd always grown up that you have to play mariachi music in a Mexican restaurant. We went in there and they were playing, you know, Guns N' Roses and Nirvana on there. We had a big pitcher of mezcal margaritas and a cazuela, steak cazuela. And it was okay. And I just looked at Chris and I was like, this is it, man. I said, this is what we're going to do. And we, you know, flew home, told my parents and they were like, well, I don't know. We're like, look, you got to go. You have to go check it out. And they flew up the next weekend and came back and said, that's what we're going to do. Mm. You know, it's a lot of the times, one of the four of us will come up with an idea and you bounce it off. And everybody shoots holes and stuff. Everyone has their opinion. Everybody wants to get from A to B, but we have different ways of getting there. And they're like, that's it. And then we, you know, had the opportunity to do the cantina. And we'd been wanting to do it. You know, we had 109 seats at 4th Street. I was running the front of the house. Chef was running the back. And we were starting to get a little stir crazy. It's like one of those things, once you are into your career and you've kind of figured out a lot of the stuff and you have these great people in place that we had for 10 and 15 years, it kind of runs itself. It's very hard to get there, but you can get there. And so we saw it as an opportunity to really do new cuisine. That was one of the biggest things is you can't put, you know, say a Cobb salad or on Red Mesa. It was so difficult to get away from the fajitas and the chimichangas that we had to keep it regional. We had to keep it true regional Mexican. And this gave us an outlet for recipes. I mean, we were eating and we're like, well, what about this? Well, this would be great. It doesn't really fit. And so it came about of a way of an outlet for recipes and stuff we want to do. It had a full bar. We didn't have a full bar at Red Mesa until COVID. So it had a full bar. It was, you know, 12,000 square feet. It was in this cool firehouse. And it was just kind of everything we wanted. But it was in 2009, the recession. And basically, people told us it was too far from Baywalk. We had a burrito place called Adobo Grill in Baywalk in 2000 that eventually closed. And we basically, Chef and I would sit out front and just twiddle our thumbs and wait for people to come. And I mean, it was a ghost town. Downtown in that time period was a ghost town. And it was almost about 2 or 3 years later before we really kind of hit our stride, kind of came out of that. Other people saw our success, go, wow, we can build down here. There's a chance of making it down here. And that's when it kind of exploded. The downtown exploded. You know, we operated below Push, the nightclub, for about 10 years. They were above us. And about 5 or 6 years ago, we took over and we built an event space up there. We have a 12,000 square foot event space up there now.
And, you know, I guess it's as it rolled through COVID and everything, it's hard to really know, but what's your gut on how much of the business was cannibalization?
We've grown with the city. So I mean, I could probably say it's, you know, it's kind of zero. Still to this day with the three restaurants, I have people come to me and, you know, they tell me which one's their favorite, which one do they go to the most. You know, if we were in Mexico, we would just have three restaurants, not three Mexican restaurants, because they are truly different. Cantina, is Latin American cuisine. It was an outlet for us to kind of do whatever we wanted to do. All the constraints of sticking to that box of regional Mexican, we didn't have to worry about. We kind of go through and we have kind of these different sayings, you know, with that one is like, if it tastes good, just make it. We weren't constrained to that. And it's like, you know, a tuna taco with wasabi and soy. We've done that for 14 years. A duck taco with goat cheese and raspberry chili jelly. Mofongo is Dominican. Mm-hmm. It's traditionally made with green plantains. We could not get enough green plantains to actually make the dish. So we started using sweet plantains, which is another variation, but it's what we make today. It became just a hit almost by accident or a lack of supply. And now it's one of the things we do. And so it took that pressure off and we got to kind of do whatever we wanted to do. If we travel to, you know, we make chimichurri there. It's Argentinian pesto. It was kind of like, you know what? There are no authentic Mexican food police that are going to, you know, get us in trouble if we do this. And it tastes good. And it's kind of like, who cares?
I hear this.
Yeah. 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 That's the hard part too, is that everyone is an authority on Mexican food, just depending on where they're from. You know, one of the things that I've always taken from that, because it's hard to hear I'm from so-and-so, I'm from here. That's not real Mexican. You know, half of the U.S. was part of Mexico at one point. And, you know, just like we had to, you just look around and use the fresh ingredients that you can. If you're in Colorado in the 1900s, you don't have certain chilies. You use what's around. You're in New Mexico, you use hatch. So it is Mexican cuisine. And the biggest thing about food is it's a story. It came from somewhere, you know, the Spanish in Mexico with the indigenous cooking, everyone just puts their little spin on it. It was made this way. Well, I don't like this, so I'm going to do this. And that's what it is. So I don't think that there's any right or wrong. It's just like anything else. It's a preference. What did you grow up eating? What do you prefer? And it's a story. It continues to develop and grow.
And someone there, Mercado, came into existence. How did that happen?
I love Mercado. That is like home cooking to me. So my mom grew up in Southern California, and that is your mom and pop, hole in the wall, gas station, Mexican. Refried beans, flour tortillas, coming off the beach from surfing. When I was growing up, whenever family would visit from California, they would come over with a styrofoam igloo cooler packed with frozen burritos on their carry-on, because that's the only way we could get Mexican food when we owned the C Bar. Mm. So it was always my mom's dream to open something like that. And so chef, mom, dad, and I piled in the car. We flew to San Antonio, ate there. We went and looked at a bunch of tortilla manufacturing equipment. We went to Austin, drove around there, flew out to California, went to San Diego, and went to where she was from and tried all this Mexican food. And I mean, people look at it like, oh, that sounds fun. Eating Mexican food six times a day, it becomes a job. And so
I'm not going to agree with that. I'm sorry.
I'll have you go with us one day. And, you know, we found this tortilla equipment because what we were having trouble getting some of the raw material. Mm. And so we, you know, just like, you know, making a sandwich, it's all about the bread and the tortillas that we were getting here, we just weren't happy with. And so Mercado, the first kind of spoke of the wheel of how we're going to make this work, was a tortilla factory. So we manufacture all of our flour tortillas from scratch at Mercado for the last 8 years. So I knew when we opened, I would have three Mexican restaurants to sell to. So we still do that to this day. We have a full bakery in there and we make all of our own tortillas and we get to control the ingredients that go into them. And it's just a great product.
Yeah, top-notch shrimp burrito too.
Yes.
Shout out.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned the grill in Baywalk, mm-hmm. Short-lived ish. What was
Adobo Grill.
Yeah.
You could be sitting across from the guy who founded Chipotle. This was in 2000. I was at my freshman year of college. So I actually worked in there when I came back from school with a bunch of buddies. And, you know, Baywalk was this promise of this new place. Everyone was so excited about it. Movie theater in downtown where there was nothing at that point. And my dad and mom came up with a burrito concept. You walk in, you pick out what ingredients you want. They put it on the flat grill. They roll your burrito and they give it to you. Only business we had where we saw declining business every year for 5 years. It just protests, hard to find parking there. I mean, you know, I could go in and get a free burrito and I still didn't go because I didn't want to park in the parking garage to walk over there. And it was difficult. It's hard because you put your heart and soul into this thing and it doesn't work out. And that's just business. Mm-hmm. Not everything is a home run. It's a lot of the stuff that, you know, that I remember. You know, I worked there for summers and a lot of the stuff that we do at Mercado, we literally had my mom and dad line up with chef and we took their orders. And that's how we figured out how we were going to set up the order windows at Mercado and figure out the flow. and took a lot of the experience of product. Like, we're not going to put steak in a holding pan. All the steak at Mercado is made to order on the flat grill.
Right.
It inhibits us because you then have to train a lot of people how to cook all this stuff fresh, but we would not be happy with the finished product if we were just scooping it out. So we learned a lot. I mean, that's the thing, is you learn a lot from your failures.
And the, I mean, the whole concept of scooper outs are taking off now. Everybody's doing it. And why did you decide not to use the Red Mesa name in that location?
That was my parents' choice. I mean, I chose Red Mesa Cantina, and that was an uphill battle. You know, that was an uphill battle with my parents. You know, they had all these different names that they wanted to do, and it basically came down. I don't have a lot of disagreements with them. And even Chef, in that, I think 9 out of 10 times we're on the exact same page, but it's that 1 in 10 where I kind of go, like, I know in my heart that this is a mistake. And, you know, I had been in the business long enough and running the business that they had trust in me. And I said, you know, when they came out with Cherry Coke, it's not, you know, Cherry something something. It's Cherry Coke. You have built up a reputation. You know, understand the credibility that you have. People love your brand, and they're going to come in and have one meal there just because it says Red Mesa. And that was why it's Red Mesa Cantina.
Makes sense. And then, you know, a food truck thrown in the mix. So sounds fun.
I kind of always wanted a food truck. There's different ways of doing it. Like a food truck, if you're starting out, you do a food truck, low startup. You can kind of test the market, test your recipe, see if it's a viable concept before you get into the brick and mortar. I went to high school with the guys from Green Bench, Nate and Steve Duffy, and it's the reason why I went and did Mercado there. I saw their business plan about a year or two before Mercado, and they had an opportunity there. They said, hey, look, we've got some vendors coming through here. We've got this space. Would you like to give it a try? And my dad and I found a food truck online on Monday, and my dad and I and my son went down to Bradenton and picked it up on Wednesday. It's going well. It's one of those things that it was meant to complement Green Bench. We're doing some caterings with them when they book events next door for weddings. People can come out and they just wear wristbands and they get all the food they want. It's about 4 or 5 months in. You know, we kind of keep telling ourselves it took 2 and 3 years for some of these concepts to really get going. I think, you know, they just built that hotel next door to Mercado. They got so much construction. One of those things that you build it and you know that eventually it will pick up. They got the parking garage down the street that's going in. St. Pete is exploding. So we did it, and it's American food. It's, you know, chicken tenders, chicken wings, Cuban sandwich. A lot of the people that are having the beer, because there's, you know, a certain amount of people that don't eat Mexican food. So if they come down there and three people want, you know, Mercado, one person may not, they have it right there.
Makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about the state of restaurants. You know, they're for the longest time, you know, many, and some of them shut during COVID. Do we have too many restaurants in St. Pete?
You know, as a restaurant owner, you're going to say, yeah, nobody wants, you know, more competition. But this is maybe the third conversation I've had with my dad about, you know, them building. And it was, you know, probably 3 years after we opened Cantina, you know, like, where are all these people going to come? And, you know, it's wildcatting for oil. You know, you're building this with the anticipation that these people are going to come. And this is probably the third wave of people moving here. I mean, the amount of people moving here now dwarfs what has happened in the last two basically giant migrations here. I mean, you know, 2011, 12, you saw all these buildings and we're like, all these restaurants, like, who's going to eat here? And then it just keeps coming and coming. You know, my thing is that I can only control what's within the four walls that I have. And we work really hard to put out a quality product and provide great service. And that's all you can do. I would love to see more mom and pops. I'd love to see more variety. I mean, I go out and eat all the time now. I love the fact that, you know, we can go try all these different restaurants. And like anything else, they will weed themselves out. You'll have the ones that do really well, that do a really good job, and they will stay. The ones that don't, won't. And that's in every industry.
And a potential new place in the future?
The Mercado too. You know, Mercado was set up with the intention that one day that would be the one that we would do multiple operations. Mm-hmm. It was streamlined. You know, Cantina is more efficient in the kitchen in terms of production than Red Mesa is. Mercado is more efficient than, say, Cantina is. Instead of having 30 items, you have 15 that you put out really, really fast. But, you know, all made from scratch there in big batches. Mercado 2, we, you know, so 09 for Cantina, there was nothing going on. You know, 2014, I'm having trouble remembering 2014 for Mercado. There was nothing going that way. Everyone has always told us, like, you're too far out. That's not going to pop. we're hypersensitive to the market. We live here. You know, we were just out at the beach for a staycation out in Treasure Island, and you kind of look around for food and you're like, well, what's kind of out here? So we took over the Two Graces property there. We know the chef, the owner. He had two restaurants going. He's getting up there in age. He was working the line. It is so difficult to be an owner operator like that. It's one thing to go in and manage, decide, do the books. It's another thing to work the Friday night rush there in the kitchen. And so I think he was ready to shut it down. Some of the things that he kind of said, I think he was tired. I think he was spread a little thin. You know, I have a really good support group between my dad and chef and the upper management that I have working with me. I always have people that I can rely on if I get tired, if I need help. And without that structure, you can't do it. So we are currently working with the city with our plans, trying to get it developed, to get our plans approved. It's a long-term thing. I've learned that when you're doing this, it's about the long-term plan, 10, 15 years down the road. So we're patiently waiting, trying to figure out what we're going to be able to do there, but it will be a Mercado 2. It's going to have about 150 to 200 seats, full bar as well. And I think this is the concept that we will continue to build, you know, 4 or 5 miles away to address people's dining needs in different markets, underserviced markets. You know, there's some other places around St. Pete in the area, but it's wonderful because we're in St. Pete. I don't have to drive across the bridge every day, an hour each direction. You know, I'm home for dinner with my children and stuff like that. And ultimately that's what's going to drive it, the quality of life.
You know, you'd mentioned that Adobo could have been Chipotle, and now you have Mercado being the first restaurant you've named, something that you've already named, which is, you know, lays the foundation to have a third, a fourth, and a fifth. So, you know, is that sort of the vision that at some point, you know, Mercado will be the thing that if there were going to be dozens of anything, it would be this concept?
I think that's the goal. You know, fortunately, the way that I came in, you know, I was able to learn from my parents and chef a lot of the heartache, you know, time, energy, money, love is a finite thing. And, you know, I saw some of the mistakes and I was able to learn everything that they could teach me and then start to grow on my own at a faster rate. You know, Bonefish, when they opened, you know, half my high school worked for Red Mesa. The other half worked at Bonefish. You know, Hooters started here. It's a really tough market to succeed in. But if you can, you know, that you can establish yourself and move on, you know, Hops, you know, those businesses are established in order to do multiple units. I was not going into this to just pay the bills, to just be able to scrape by. I was able to kind of look at the landscape and go, this is a career. This is a business that I have the intention of, you know, buying a bank, starting a bank. You know, your whole goal in starting a bank is to get bought out by one of the big guys. You know, I look at the Columbia, you know, that operator, you know, fantastic, multiple years, 5 restaurants. Do you need more than that? Do you need to sell it? No, but I bet if he could do that. This was meant for me to secure a future for my children, to be comfortable, to do something that I love doing. You know, if I had 5 and they wanted to buy them, okay, that's an option. But if I just want to run 3 or 4 restaurants, which I currently do, I love it. The amount of work that I put in kind of stays about the same level because I just hire more people, these great people. They love it because they see, okay, look, these guys are expanding. So they join our team and we've been able to attract some amazing people the last couple of years. They've worked in corporate. They love the industry, but they don't like the rigidity of corporate. They love the industry, but they don't like the mess of some mom and pops. It's just too loose for them. Okay, well, here's this hybrid. Family run, you get to talk to the owner every day if you want to talk or express something. You also have upward mobility. And so that's kind of what we've been able to present to people. Here it is, you get to work for us, and here's the growth potential. And I may just keep doing restaurants just to keep the upper management happy. These guys want to run their own stores. We have an advertising and marketing in-house firm that we have that we employ. We have a maintenance company. We've been able to kind of grow as much as we can with the support of these other people. And I'll just keep doing it as long as it's fun. And I love doing this. So, you know, that was the intention, but it was to have options. You know, we might just have 2 or 3 Mercados in St. Pete, and that's plenty for me.
Pete Bedia, it's been good catching up. Thanks for stopping by.
Pleasure. Very nice to meet you.